I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu of Yahoo Sports Canada, and on this week's episode of the Raptors Recap, I have former Clippers and Spurs video coordinator, creator of thejumpball.net, and Washington Post contributor Mo Dockhill. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Will, for having me, man.
Thank you. That's a very impressive resume that you got there.
Thank you. I've certainly tried. Was hoping one day be a head coach. Didn't work out that way.
Man. But you got pretty close, though. You got closer than most, I feel like. Just rattle off your resume a little bit, because, you know, basketball is taking you all over the world.
Yeah, so let's see. I've spent 8 years in the NBA. I had two different stints with the Clippers, 3 years each, and then two with the Spurs. And while working with the Spurs, I got an opportunity to work with Brett Brown and Team Australia for 3 years. And that was from 2010 to the 2012 Olympics. So basketball literally has taken me around the world, from going to Australia and playing games and with that team in Europe and all the way to the Olympics. So, basketball has taken me around the world a few times.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a great life so far. What would you say, like, what goes into, like, the everyday day-to-day workings of a video coordinator? Before we go to any of the Raptors stuff, I'm very curious about just how that goes.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the funniest thing was, like, people would always tell me, like, I want your job. I'm like, no, you don't. My job's hard. A video coordinator job is hard. It's, you constantly have to make sure you have film ready for whatever we're doing in practice of, and usually that's showing what your team did that the night before, whenever you last played, and have that film ready. You're constantly preparing for upcoming opponents. You know, we always say teams shouldn't be looking ahead. Well, it's the video coordinator's job to always be looking ahead. Now we're preparing for playoff prep. You know, this is something I would have started probably a few weeks ago, you know, just preparing for all the different possible playoff opponents we might have in the first round and start getting film ready together. So on the day-to-day stuff, you know, you're coming in early, you're getting ready for coaches meetings, making sure that film's ready and whatever is being shown. You're working with your video staff if you have one. Not every team has a large video staff, and you're getting together with whatever coach has the scout coming up next and working on making sure he has all the film and we're ready to go on that regard. And you're working with the head coach in terms of making sure he's got everything he wants for whenever the team's going to practice. And then you're going to the players and doing the same thing and making sure they have everything they want. So it's just a matter of always being prepared and making sure film's ready.
Right. Sounds like a lot of late nights, early mornings, things like this.
Well, I mean, you're not sleeping much. If you're going to be a video coordinator, like, just don't count on much sleep and don't count on much of a social life.
Right. Well, I think we've established so far that you're probably the most qualified guest we've had on the podcast so far. Let's move over to the Raptors and sort of just – let's start with just the bigger picture, right? Obviously, in the offseason, they make the change going from Dwayne Casey to Nick Nurse. And, you know, Nick Nurse has been an assistant here with the Raptors for a while. Just from your observations, what have you seen differently out of this Raptors team just from a coaching perspective with the change they made in the offseason?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. It's kind of hard to compare just with the big change of switching out Kawhi Leonard for DeMar DeRozan. But the other thing too was, you know, and it was talked about many times last year how Nick Nurse was the one who kind of revolutionized their offense last year. So there hasn't been, I haven't felt like there's been that much of a change in terms of what they're doing offensively. I will say this though, there is an onus to really push the ball more in transition, you know, just kind of looking at stats from synergy.com, you know, the Raptors in transition last year kind of just ran it about 15% of the time and were mostly a half court team. This year they've upped that to 20%, you know, and they have the highest points per possession in transition, just in that regard. And that's kind of something like, you know, you can tell that there's a real onus to just kind of, let's get the ball out, let's get running, and let's get going in transition. And I would say that's probably the biggest change. After that, I think he's, you know, the half court offense has kind of always been Nick Nurse's baby, especially since last year. So I don't feel like there's been too much of a change there.
Right. And watching, you know what I mean? Like,
you tell me, Will, like, is that how, what are you seeing in that regard?
You know, it's funny. I think I largely agree with you. Like, the offense has been kind of the same. I will say, sort of since Gasol has come, they've changed the way the offense is running. So a lot of it was pick and roll before, right? DeMar was a very good pick and roll player. Kawhi is also a good pick and roll player, but he doesn't create and doesn't pass as well out of the pick and roll. So they don't run as many of those for him. And Kyle obviously is a pick and roll just wizard, especially with the passing. Sure. But I think since Gasol's come, though, I think the way the offense is running now, there's a lot more stuff coming out of the high post, a lot more off ball action as well. And it feels like as the year's gone on, and also as sort of the, you know, as the roster has gotten more sophisticated, they've started to sprinkle in a couple more wrinkles to the offense. But one of the pieces that you wrote on the Raptors earlier this season that I thought was really great that you should check out on the Washington Post was about Nick Nurse and how he's created this 1-2-2 zone. And, you know, we talked about Nurse has always been in charge of the offense, but, I mean, talk about this 1-2-2 zone, because I feel like it really does express a lot of creativity on the part of Nick Nurse.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Most common defense in the NBA is man-to-man. That's something that we haven't seen a lot of. The zone defense kind of, when they change the rules, it you can play a manipulated zone. You can't just do a straight 2-3 zone and pack a guy in the paint. Right, we know that rule, right? It's going to be a defensive three, a technical foul, free throw on the ball, and all that stuff. So, and we still see it from time to time when guys don't get out of the paint. What, you know, the zone that Nick Nurse set up, you know, with a 1-2-2 zone, really kind of just made it a point to, like, we're going to get out to the shooters and not really have it doesn't really open up the paint, but they're not in a threat to always get a defensive three because there's nobody really in the paint for more than 2 seconds, you know, jump in, jump out, kind of be there for help or whatnot. So it allows them to kind of get out. And, you know, you're seeing more and more teams this year use a zone, which has gone up from years past just because offenses aren't used to that. When you're in a regular season, you don't have a lot of time to scheme for a specific team. And that's what kind of makes the playoffs different. But in the regular season, you can catch a team off guard with a zone just because, you know, when was the last time a guy like LeBron James had seen a zone? You know, he didn't play any college ball. But any of these kids who've played college ball, you know, they haven't seen one since then because they rarely see it in the NBA. So it was a nice little smart wrinkle to kind of throw out there. And, you know, I'd say the Raptors have used it a little bit less than they were, I think, in the beginning of the year. You know, I think part of that is with Gasol in and things like that. It's hard to kind of get him up to snuff in terms of where he needs to be in the zone and things like that, because that requires a ton of communication. Because when you run a zone defense, you open yourself up to giving up a lot of offensive boards. And I think that's kind of something that the Raptors did a really good job, you know, of just kind of keeping teams down to one shot and that was it. So, you know, the zone defense is something that we didn't see a lot of last year. We started to see this year, and I'll be interested to see if Nick Nurse uses it much in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you pointed out in the zone also is that, like, it's a little bit unorthodox because they're putting Pascal as that one, and it's really just you're leveraging a lot of his athleticism because he's so quick and he's also very long at 6'9" that he's comfortable sliding around on the perimeter, but he's also able to really shut off penetration from that spot.
Yeah, I mean, having a guy like Pascal at the top of the zone is really a problem for most teams because, you know, that's your guard coming down, and now you have this – I don't even know what his wingspan is, but it's incredible. It's long. That's just my definition of it. It's not a number. It's just long.
Yeah.
And, you know, and can really disrupt things, and he's got quickness and speed with that. You know, so I think, you know, being able to put him there and then have guys – you know, who are good defenders in their own right, and Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, Kyle Lowry, and all those guys, you know, Serge Ibaka kind of as your rim protector, being able to kind of back that up behind him allows Siakam to be a little more aggressive at the top of it and sort of disrupt things. And I think that's kind of where that stuff stems from.
Yeah, I think to be honest, like, Nick is one of the biggest things with Nick coming in is just he's had to come in and bring in sort of fresh ideas, you know, like creativity to the job. Because I feel like that was one of the knocks against Dwayne Casey was that, you know, he'd run like a – he'd keep things very consistent in the regular season, and his teams were great at executing. But, you know, he didn't really have that many other wrinkles in his game plan, and it felt like in the playoffs it was easier to scheme against a team like the Raptors. It felt a bit predictable. And, like, this year I feel like Nurse is it's got more creative, and I think that zone is one example of that. What about the idea that with the offense? So I think the offense for the Raptors has been pretty efficient all season. I think it's been top 10, and it should be based on talent. But as you pointed out previously, that you know, there is kind of a strange disconnect with, like, the way the Raptors move the ball with Kyle Lowry and now Gasol, and, like, the ball movement is almost Spursian. And then you got Kawhi, who came from the Spurs, but then he plays a lot more isolation, and marrying the two of them together has sort of been sort of a season-long process.
Yeah, so I've been banging that drum for a while. I think, you know, you can. It's obvious when you watch the game, and you even said it, when Kawhi comes off of pick and rolls, he's not looking to create. And I think that's kind of a myth about Kawhi, that we seem to think, like, he's just all in all move the ball kind of guy and things like that, just because he came from the Spurs system. And I really think, you know, if you go back to that year, the year before last, when he was a top three MVP candidate and all that stuff, you know, Kawhi was a very heavy ball dominant guy, you know, in that run. I don't have the numbers in front of me because I'm terrible at prepping properly for this, Will. But you know, he was very ball dominant in that run, and you see it again with the Raptors. So there's kind of that two offenses I've been talking about, where, you know, you can see it when Lowry's in the game and Kawhi's not. That ball's flying around, and you see Lowry's usage goes up a lot. You see his points per possessions shoot up a lot. And then when he's in the game with Kawhi, all those numbers drop for him because that ball's in Kawhi's hand, and he hasn't quite figured out how well to play with him. And even last night's game against Orlando, I want to say it was in the first quarter, but there was a possession where I was just like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. All those guys are on the court together. Gasol's on the court. And really, it's four guys playing and Kawhi just standing in the corner. Like, it just feels like such a weird disconnect to me. And that might have been the design of the play, and it might be unfair for me to have pinpoint one play, but it just really stood out to what I'm talking about. In that sense of this has kind of been a weird thing of trying to figure out. I mean, it took Lowry a while to create that kind of chemistry with DeRozan, hence why they're really incredibly close and all of that. But it took a minute to get there. It wasn't always that quick. But I think that's also where Gasol comes in, and I think that's where having Gasol kind of is such a big upgrade over Valanciunas, just because his ability to be a playmaker and like you said, you know, being able to throw the ball into the high post and let him make plays off of guys cutting and things like that. I think that's really where the game is at. And I think that just adds another value and gives them another chance to kind of marry the two. But again, I just don't think, like, Kawhi's not a cutter. He's not a guy that's going to cut off these guys or things like that. That's where Siakam becomes so important, because that's what he does really well.
Right.
And constantly keeps the pressure on the defense, and these guys are always finding him. But that's the hardest part for Nick Nurse's job right now, is figuring out how to get it so that all five guys are working together as one when Lowry and Kawhi are on the court together. We're just not seeing it, and that might not even be as big of a problem as I think it is, just because I'm a little nerd. But to me, when I see that, that's kind of what I look at, and I'm like, man, it gets kind of weird when I see that on the court.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like the most pronounced examples of this is, like, you know, down the stretch in crunch time, let's say it's a 5-point game or whatever, the last 3-4 minutes, the ball is going to Kawhi every single time. And I feel like, for me personally, I'm not as aggrieved by this, because I feel like he's still very effective in these isolation possessions, right? Ultimately, no matter how you score, it's really just about how efficiently you're scoring. And I think this season Kawhi is up to 17% of his possessions in isolation. He's at 1.03 points per possession, which is pretty good. He's in the 84th percentile. I feel like there might be more effective ways, right? I mean, even if you do a post-up, I think there's ways where the Raptors are – sometimes they'll have Kawhi dribble at the defense, and that's really just not his strength. His dribble is fine, but it's not – he's not like Kyrie Irving. He's not carving up a defense, and he's definitely not passing a lot out of those situations. And it's almost better if you can get him into the post and let him face up, almost run like a Carmelo Anthony type of offense around him, because he can get you a good shot out of that mid-range spot. He's very good from that area.
Yeah, and the thing that's tough about it with Kawhi, and especially in crunch time, because that's where I think the problem really gets highlighted.
Yeah.
Because you have all these guys, but we just talked about how Dwayne Casey was so predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it kind of becomes the same thing. In a close game, you know it's going to be – it's going to come down to the ball's going to be in Kawhi's hands. Can you stop him? And that's where it's going to get interesting. And will Kawhi trust his teammates? You know, will he trust kicking it out to Lowry? You know, I know he'll trust Danny Green just because they've been together forever. So
yeah.
I think that's one guy. But, like, will he trust the other guys? Will he give it up and then get the ball back in a different situation, you know? And you know, can he get off the ball to get back onto it and have the advantage? You know, I don't know if that's something he's – I don't know if that's something they're really going to do. And again, that kind of that plays a little bit into the defense's hands. And I think, again, listen, they can go to him the whole time and he can score 100 points out of it and they can win games. And I mean, you know, it's just the way it works in basketball. Sometimes better offense, you know, beats better defense. But I think it still it gives the defense a chance here. And in that, you know what's going to happen down the stretch of close games, and you know where that ball's going to go, and you know what you got to do to get the stop, or you know, if you're the Raptors, you know he's the guy that's got to get you the bucket. It then just becomes a matter of, you know, who's better that day. And I don't think there's a lot of – I miss the creativity of it. I think there's more things you can do even in crunch time. You know, like you said, having him come off of a slice cut – into the post and have Lowry enter it to him, and you know, having or even better yet, you know, having Gasol in the post and having Kawhi coming off of a split action with Danny Green or something. You know, I'm just throwing stuff on the wall, but just trying to mix it up and change things to catch defenses off guard, you know, might be a play for them. It might be an advantage for them that they could take, they can really try to use. But I think you and I both kind of feel at the end of games, I'm putting words in your mouth, that's not fair.
Oh, no. I've seen it all season. You're absolutely right about this, yeah.
At the end of the game, I feel like it's just going to be Kawhi Leonard at the top of the key. Maybe he gets a high ball screen.
Yeah, maybe. And to be honest, like, decent defenses have mostly, like, blitzed him out of that high ball screen. And he's handled it okay, but he's not making, like, next-level passes immediately to an open shooter. Off of those, off the extra attention. And so, I mean, you know, going back to what we said earlier, I think that's where you get a guy like Gasol to sort of just, you know, marry the two parts together a little bit. And I feel like there's sort of been this ongoing discussion within the Raptors because, you know, JV was a guy who a lot of fans really supported him and looked at the numbers and said JV should get a lot more touches and a guy like DeRozan should get less touches. And obviously it never worked out that way. DeRozan was always the number one guy and JV was, you know, third option at best. And now that he's gone to Memphis, and unfortunately his year is over with an ankle injury or whatever, but he was averaging about 20 points a game. He's posting up huge numbers. And then you look at Gasol, and Gasol's averaging like a career low in scoring and things like this. And I think to a lot of fans, it felt like, wait, what's going on? Did we give up and make the wrong move? But I think you and I are both in agreement that a guy like Gasol, he's almost like a center version of Kyle Lowry. Like he does give you impact and versatility that kind of extends beyond the box score.
I mean, listen, I've gone up against Marc Gasol for years when I was with the Clippers. We've played them in two straight playoff series. The year before, I played them in San Antonio. So I've gotten a good look at Marc Gasol to the point that I hate him.
Okay.
You know, he's knocked me out of the playoffs twice, and I'm not very happy about him. And I don't hate him. He's a very lovely man. I'm sure he is, but I have a lot of he scarred me a lot. He doesn't even know who the hell I am, but he's caused a lot of pain for me in my life. But he's a guy you can quarterback your offense with for a few possessions. You know, he's a guy that you can say, hey, we're just going to give the ball to Marcus Gasol in the high post, in the post. You know, we're going to run DHOs off of him, dribble handoffs off of him and things like that. And you know what? We're going to trust that he's going to make the right decision because he's done it his whole career. I get everybody loves Jonas, you know, he's your guy. You guys raised him basically, you know, and fans do that with every team. And I 100% understand it. You've invested so much time and energy rooting for this guy. So when he does something better or you see an improvement, you're elated and you jump up with excitement. But I'm going to be honest with you. Marcus Gasol's an upgrade over Jonas Valanciunas. At the end of the day, you know, the things that he can do on the court, he can do just the same amount of stuff Jonas can do, and he can do more. You know, he can create. The thing that Valanciunas can't do is he's not a guy I trust to be a playmaker. You know, and I'm telling you, you can build an entire offense if you want around Marcus Gasol, because Memphis did it. Probably not anymore because he's getting old, but you know, he still has that in his mindset, and having a big that can pass like that and still shoot the ball really well. We saw him hit the 4-point play last night, you know, and shoot it as well as he can from range and things like that. Like, it's a, you got to just understand this is a better basketball play. It hurts to lose, you know, it hurts to send off your homegrown child to bring in Gasol, but you know, this is what you got to do if you're going to try to compete for a championship. And you know, there's a reason why a lot of people's eyebrows shot up when that trade happened and were like, wow, that's a really good trade for the Raptors.
Yeah, for sure. Since Gasol's come here, by the way, I've said this on the podcast like a million times, but I'll repeat it here. Raptors are top five in assists, they're I think second in passes, and the three-point shooting has been really, really good. And that's one of the things where, you know, you can fix your three-point shooting by getting a better shooter, but you can also fix your three-point shooting by getting a guy who passes better, makes better decisions, and I feel like that's also been one of the main benefits of Gasol. So I feel like, look, the Raptors, I think most fans are pretty comfortable with what they are right now. Like, you know,
can I interrupt you?
Yeah,
real quick?
Go ahead.
Because you made a great point about how important it is for a shooter to have a good passer. You know, I don't think people understand for shooters, and I really learned this in San Antonio, and then I really saw it in J.J. Redick when we were with the Clippers. You know, just exactly where they want the ball. You know, it makes such a big difference for shooters if the ball gets placed exactly where they want it. And I saw it where Chris Paul would walk up to J.J. going like, where do you want the ball? Like, when you shoot, where, how do you want to catch it? Where do you want, you know, this and that? And they knew it. And then you have a guy like Paul who can deliver that pass consistently almost every time, and he'll know when he's off a little bit. He knows if JJ missed the shot, it wasn't necessarily because JJ's form was off, but that pass screwed up his form. Excuse me, I got very excited on that word pass. You know, but you know, he knows that kind of threw off his form a little bit, and I think that's something you have in Gasol. Is he's an excellent passer in that regard. And it's a great point you made, Will. Just, you know, having that guy being able to make those passes on a consistent basis and hit the target exactly where the shooters want it is key and critical, and really improves shooters, you know, numbers and gives, makes it easier for them. The less movement for a shooter, it's better for them. The big thing for a shooter is repetition and being able to recreate the same shot over and over again. And, you know, that starts with getting the ball right where they want it in their shooter's pocket. And, you know, Gasol's a guy that can do that for you.
Yeah, definitely. And this is something I think people will feel, I mean, as a Raptors fan, you know, like, it doesn't really feel right to feel comfortable about a playoff run, but with the talent on the roster now, and especially all this talent that's like, you know, battle tested talent, where you got finals guys who have won finals MVP and Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, honestly, 2014 was right there with Kawhi in terms of right. Who could have won that finals MVP. And you got Marc Gasol, who's been through a lot of, you know, battles. Kyle's been through a lot of battles at this point, you know, Serge Ibaka as well. I think for the most part, people are pretty comfortable with where the Raptors are heading into the playoffs. I guess we can start with the first round and just, you know, can you envision any of these potential matchups giving the Raptors problems? And if so, why?
I mean, this might make for bad podcasting, but I can't see them having problems in the first round.
Likewise.
You know, the truth of the matter is they have so much depth. They have the ability to play differently. I think depth is overrated in the playoffs. But what I mean by depth is they have the ability to play different styles, you know, which I've kind of ding them a little bit about how it goes very one-on-one to very pass happy. But it is a good sign that when Kawhi goes to the bench, they can put Lowry in and they're going to get the best Lowry minutes during that time. You know, Siakam's numbers, I don't know if they jump up much when whether it's Lowry or Kawhi on the court, but I know he gets most of his assists or most of his buckets off of Kyle Lowry. You know, Lowry's the one that hits him the most and finds him for buckets. So I think that's something that's big. It's, I think it's a tune of Lowry gets two assists a game off of passes to Siakam, and that's higher. Everybody else after that to Siakam is like 0.5 or 6 or whatever. So I think that kind of helps in that ability, being able to say, okay, we're going to go into our Marcus Gasol play package for a little bit. You know, we're going to go into our Lowry play package. We're going to go to our Kawhi play package. We're going to go to our Siakam play package, which I didn't think that I was going to say before the start of this year. You know, but he's made massive improvements to his game. There's still elements where he needs to improve, but it's just, they're just a hard team. And I can't see a team really being able to unearth that, you know. It's, you know, it looks like it's going to be what, let me pull up the standings. I have it up here right now. So, you know, it's possibly Detroit or Miami or Brooklyn. Like, none of those teams I really think can hang with you guys.
Yeah, I would say, like, I agree with you. I don't think any of them can really hang too much. I think Detroit just might give them a little bit of trouble because, I mean, it's a weird thing. So I don't know if you're super in-depth, in tune with, like, the Raptors minutiae, but I think Dwayne Casey and Nick Nurse have a bit of bitterness between the two of them. It's definitely shown up a couple times this season. But, yeah, I think Dwayne does have a little bit of industrial knowledge in terms of how the Raptors tick, and obviously he's seen Kyle Lowry in particular up close. And the Pistons, to their credit, they've defended the Raptors really well. But realistically, I don't think that's too much of a trouble. I just think that, you know, Blake Griffin, out of all the players just that they could potentially match up with, he might give the Raptors the most trouble just because it's hard for a skinny guy like Pascal to hold him in the post. But, you know, the Raptors are trying out this, like, they're trying to go backwards a little bit too, because they started the season splitting up the centers with JV and Ibaka and Gasol and Ibaka now. But they're starting to play Gasol and Ibaka together a little bit too. And I feel like, do you feel like that could be something a coach does in anticipation of playing a specific matchup like the Pistons, who do have a very, very big front court?
Yeah, I think that's something. You know, I listen, personally, just for my own entertainment value, I'd like it to be Detroit because I do want to see that battle go back and forth. But it's not just Casey and Nick Nurse. You know, Blake Griffin has battled with Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol for that's years right. as well. You know, so these guys go back. And there's definitely going to be some stuff there. I think it'd be a fun matchup. You know, I think having Lowry and those guys, you know, battle with Reggie Jackson and you know, the Pistons having the two bigs and Drummond, who's had a great year. Drummond's not the guy that people think he is. You know, the year he had this year is has really shown how much he's improved, but everybody goes back to thinking of Drummond and they kind of just think to what he was a few years ago. But he's really improved this year and playing really well next to Blake. And the thing is, Blake can win you a couple of playoff games. I've seen it. I've experienced it. Thanks to him, I had some good nights because of it. You know, he can win you a couple of playoff games. I don't know if they have enough to win a series. They might make you sweat. They might win two games. But I don't think we'll ever really feel like it was a threat to knock the Raptors out. But it is a smart thing to play Gasol and Serge together, just so that they can get used to each other on the court. The hardest thing for any of these teams that pulled off big trades at the trade deadline is you have a very small runway to develop some sort of chemistry going into the playoffs. If this is somebody that's going to play huge minutes for you, like Gasol is going to, like Tobias Harris for the Sixers, or Mirotić hasn't been that big for the Bucks, mainly because of injury, but another guy. But those are all guys that are going to have, you know, you got to develop that chemistry. So it's important to get them time on the court together, and it's not the same. Practice is not the same as a game. So I think that matters, and I think it's important to see that, and it's important for Nick Nurse to see that. Is this something I can go to if we play Detroit? Is this a lineup I can go to even when we're not playing Detroit? What do I get out of this? Where does this help us? Where does it hurt us? That's really what he needs to do and evaluate that. and you need to do it in more than one game, right? You need to have more than just a small sample size. So I think it's smart to do it, especially preparing for Detroit, because, you know, they're a definite possibility to be the team you match up with. They're definitely who, if I had my way, that's who it would be. So I think that's something that we have to keep an eye on, because that's exactly how you're probably going to start the games, I think, you know, or at least they're going to get a lot of minutes together. Cause like you said, Blake's a tough cover for a guy like Siakam.
Yeah, definitely. Like Siakam's, they played three times this season. Siakam fouled out twice.
Yeah. I mean, Blake just puts a lot of pressure on you. I mean, he doesn't get enough credit. He hasn't gotten enough buzz this year for how great he's been. I haven't seen the numbers, but it might be his best year or one of his best years where, you know, I mean, he's shooting the ball well. He can take you off the dribble. He can post up. He's just a physical specimen and a very good beast. And again, another guy who can really pass and he'll find Drummond on those high low passes. They'll run a 5-4 pick and roll, you know, and he'll be able to hit Drummond or hit the shooters in the corner if you guys, you know, collapse too far deep into tagging the roller. So, you know, he's a tough cover. It'd be fun, but again, at the end of the day, I still would be shocked if they got more than two games. And two might even be a lot.
Oh, man. Dwayne Casey's going to celebrate those two wins, though. That's another...
He should.
He should celebrate like two championships, actually.
Let me ask you this question, Will.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. If the timelines were different,
uh-huh,
and if they traded for Kawhi Leonard before they fired Dwayne Casey, would they have fired Dwayne Casey?
I think... That's so hard to say. I think Masai and Dwayne Casey have like always had a little bit of disagreement over the years in terms of how I'm surprised that like Dwayne Casey didn't get let go after 2015 when they got swept by the Wizards. Like, right, you know, the Raptors weren't healthy. Like Kyle Lowry wasn't healthy, things like that. But like to get swept in a 4-5 series and to have Paul Pierce just like torch you for like 15, 18 points a game. Like, you know, I was a little bit surprised, but I think the chances are much better of him staying for sure, because I think you probably want to present some sort of united front, you know, with Kawhi here. You want to provide a stable situation. But I will say on that part, though, at least Nick Nurse has been really adaptable with the Kawhi situation, like him sitting out like basically random games for load management. I think Nurse has managed that pretty well. So in retrospect, it actually doesn't look like that bad of a decision. The actual question I have is, I mean, like let's say they had Kawhi first. Do you feel like Mike Budenholzer would have chosen the Raptors over the Bucks?
That's another good question there.
And if we all know, if Bud doesn't go to the Bucks, then the Bucks are not what they are, right? Because Bud has completely turned that team around.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's actually a really good question, Will. Damn you for thinking of that. Can we re-record that? I want to ask you that question. that's a good question. I mean, that'd be a tough one for Bud to pass up. I'll say this though, I would probably guess he takes the Bucks job just because, you know, Giannis is going to be there for a few more years. We don't know where Kawhi is going to be next year, right? So and even if Bud was the coach, there's still no guarantee that's, you know, that he's going to stick around and be that guy, you know, that Kawhi's there the next year. So it's a more of a stability thing, I think, and I bet, you know, the Bucks kind of bring that. Even if they had pulled that trade off earlier, I still think Bucks would have had a good chance at Bud.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, get back to our conversation about the playoffs. So let's skip past the first round, because realistically, they're going to be fine.
Right.
Second round, the Raptors are probably going to face up with the Sixers. Now, the Raptors have had a lot of success against the Sixers this year, but the Sixers, much like the Raptors, have had very different rosters throughout. You know, there's been games Kawhi didn't play, there's games that Marc Gasol didn't feature in, you know, and things like this. So, right. But for the most part, I think the Raptors actually match up pretty well with a team like the Sixers. And I'm curious to get your take on it, because if we just look at just, you know, position by position, Gasol's a very good post defender, has always been a good one. And you throw him against Embiid. Simmons has had a lot of trouble against Kawhi Leonard this year. He one game, the first time they played together against each other, Simmons had 11 turnovers, and the game after that, he had 7. So, you know, Kawhi's been able to get into the ball and stop the offense. And the rest of that team... The Raptors seem to have an answer for the Sixers. How do you see that situation?
I mean, that's a great matchup for the Raptors, I think. And I think having Gasol kind of really seals it. You know, I'm sure Jonas would have done a good job on Embiid as well, but I feel like Gasol's still a better defender. And you know, just another big, a huge body, you know, that he could throw on to Embiid. It's a challenge. It'd be a challenge for Philly in that sense. I think it's a good one for the Raptors. That's who you'd probably want to play in the second round over Boston or Milwaukee. You know, but the thing is, if they can, the thing that scares me about the Sixers is if they figure it out, the chemistry wise, you know, that they're the biggest chemistry experiment just because they've made two huge trades in the season, basically remodeled their entire team. I think if they figure out their chemistry, that's a tough thing just because, you know, Simmons can be a really good defender when he wants to be. So can, you know, Butler. Embiid's great as a rim protector. They provide some challenges, but at the same time, I think you guys have all the matchups you need. You have enough guys to throw at Jimmy, Tobias Harris, and Simmons, and Redick for that matter. You know, I think that's who you would want to play. I think you guys should be very happy that they're the three seed. They pretty much are locked into that. But it's not going to be easy, you know, because Embiid can walk into and be the best player at any game at any time. You know, he could be the best player on the court at any point, you know, and there's a lot of challenges there. I still think Kawhi's one of the best, and I think, you know, Embiid's right behind him, and he could really have an influence and an impact on the court. So it's going to be a fun series. I don't think that's a clear cut. Like, I wouldn't be upset if the Raptors lost. I wouldn't be upset if Philly lost. I would be upset if it was like a sweep either way. I would expect this to go six to maybe even seven games just because I think they'll be able to throw haymakers back and forth. But again, I think this is where the Raptors' abilities to just play a few different styles is going to help them. And I'd have to give them the edge. And by the way, if you ask me tomorrow, I had completely changed my mind with all four teams. I've been the most indecisive I've ever been when it's come to picking these things. Just because I'm like, oh, well, they could do this today. And then the next day, like, oh, no, well, maybe they'll do that. You know, so it's a challenge, but I think it'd be a hell of a series.
Yeah, for sure. And it feels like it's like the loser of the series is going to have to deal with some very, very difficult questions about their long-term future. Just because both teams have very key free agents coming up. And, you know, losing the second round, I think both these teams have higher expectations than that.
I think it's silly for Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, and Boston if they got upset losing in the second round to one of these other teams. Just because, you know, if you get run out of the gym, if you get swept or you lose in five games and you weren't close in any of those games, then you should be upset. But I really think on any given night, you know, this could be a toss up, you know. I think they're all relatively closely even. You know, I think that is that thing. So I know that you're right. Toronto has huge questions about the future. Philly has huge questions about their future. So, you know, depending what happens this year really could affect on what the team looks like in next year and years to come. So I understand the pressure behind it, but as just a person who watches basketball, I wouldn't be upset if whoever loses in a close, tough, hard fought series, I would just be like, the ball bounced their way this time. And that's kind of the end of it. Now, if you get swept, it's a whole different story.
Yeah, for sure. Look, Raptors, please just don't get swept again, okay? I've seen enough of these.
Oh, I mean, you guys.
I've seen enough of these. Three in the last 4 years.
Yeah, you guys can't deal with
that. Oh, my God.
For you guys, I hope it doesn't happen. Just for the mental stability of
oh my God.
I don't know, what is it, Torontoans? I don't know what to call you guys.
Torontonians.
Torontonians.
Yeah.
Okay, that's actually kind of a fun word to say.
Yeah.
For you Torontonians, I hope you guys don't get swept at any point in the playoffs just because of the trouble you guys have had the past few years.
Yeah, I don't even know how Masai Ujiri would react. I mean, you change the star players, you change the coach, you know, you bring in trade deadline acquisitions, and then you still get the same result. I mean, I don't even know what to do at that point.
Your head on the wall, that's all you can do.
Yeah, for real. I mean, the Sixers – I think the only thing with them is it's always struck me as strange that they don't run much pick and roll. And I always feel like because they have so many pieces on the roster and one very unique piece in Simmons who has a very obvious strengths and very obvious weaknesses that it forces them to play sort of a non-orthodox style. But it does strike me as kind of weird that they don't run more of that offense through Jimmy Butler as the main, you know, playmaker, and maybe Simmons at the four almost, because it feels like that team should be really primed to play pick and roll. I'm trying to think about how you would guard a guy like Embiid in pick and roll situations, and it just seems it should be impossible on paper.
Well, it goes back. I mean, one, they've picked up the number of how much pick and rolls they've ran this year compared to last year. I understood it last year just because you didn't want to crowd Simmons because you knew everybody's going to back off in the pick and roll. So, you know, instead of him having to beat two guys, you know, just have him try to beat his man or whatnot. So I kind of understood it when the ball's in Simmons' hands because everybody's just going to lay off. And, you know, now you just have two guys crowding the paint versus just his primary ball handler. But they have, you know, down the stretch, they do turn to Jimmy. You know, Jimmy's their closer down the stretch, and they run everything, you know, through him in crunch time, you know, and they are running some, you know, I highlighted it a while back when I did a video breakdown of one of the Sixers games, and they ran a short action, which is something that you'd have to look up Mike D'Antoni's sons back in the day. You know, they'd run it, and as Jimmy Butler's coming off the pick on the high screen and roll, it's usually in Embiid setting. As he's rolling, you have Simmons really kind of in the dunker spot, you know, ready, and it kind of puts the guy who's defending Embiid's defender in a tough spot. Does he stay with Jimmy? Does he go to Embiid? It puts the guy defending Simmons in a tough spot. Does he have to take the roll, or does that leave Simmons open, or does he let Embiid roll right to the rim? You know, it puts teams in a bit of a challenge. And if you try to help from the weak side, it's usually JJ or Tobias Harris in both corners. So, you know, Jeez. Now you have two shooters. You know, it's a tough cover. Like, you know, I look at it, it's one of my favorite kind of actions out of it, you know, for this team. But it's a tough thing because they got just enough weapons to hurt you with it. You know, so they can play different ways. You know, they're going to go into the post with Embiid, you know, and then when he's out of the game, they'll run a few more pick and rolls. They're going to do dribble handoffs, and they're running more dribble handoffs with JJ Redick and Simmons, you know, and besides just Redick and Embiid. So we're seeing kind of the evolution of it. Again, it's hard to do these things in season without a training camp. You know, we're seeing it with Marc Gasol. I'm sure there'd be a whole different type of offense, you know, in place had, you know, you guys had Gasol at the beginning of the training camp, and Nick Nurse had time to really put all these things together and put this in practice and put these things in the playbook, and develop it. So I think we're going to see some interesting things in that series. I think we'll see more pick and roll. We're seeing it now. I think we're slowly getting more and more of that stuff. And I think, you know, Brett Brown's kind of experimenting and exploring it just the same way as Nick Nurse is with Gasol and Ibaka. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out in that series.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's say the Raptors get past the second round as well. They're in the East Finals now again. They're going to play one of the Celtics or the Bucks. Let's start with the Celtics first. I feel like the Bucks, to me, they just elicit fear all the time. The Celtics, I feel like, I don't know where you stand on the Celtics particularly. The talent is there, but I think with Hayward, it's clear that he's not going to be as productive as he was pre-injury, at least this season. With that in mind, and also Tatum sort of stagnating where he is in his development, it feels like the Celtics aren't as deadly as the talent, and I guess as the preseason prognostications say. But where are you with the Celtics?
I think the Celtics have the talent. It's whether they have the locker room. Okay. You know, it's we've seen it all year with Kyrie having problems, you know, trying to learn how to be a leader on the job and not really having true leadership skills from what we've seen so far. You know, and you can take that as a dig at Kyrie or whatnot. It's just been painfully obvious in watching how he reacts and to these guys. So it's been a struggle in that sense. I'd be more afraid of the Celtics if they had the right locker room, if they had the right chemistry and right mojo in their locker room, than the Bucks right now, if that were the case. But okay, just because their locker room seems like a mess, you know, I value teams that can win different ways, you know, and that's kind of been my my thing about the Bucks, and Bucks fans are pretty upset with me, and rightfully so, because you know this is the most fun they've had in a few years with the team. But I think this is a team. I think the Bucks are a very schemable team, and I think that's something we might see in the playoffs. You know.
Okay, do tell, because again, like I'm telling you, I'm worried about the Bucks. They got like 45 double digit wins.
Yeah, and that's fine, you know, and that's regular season stuff, you know, and the thing people have to understand, the biggest difference in the NBA between playoffs and the regular season is, in the playoffs, we have time to sit down and actually game plan. And when I mean actually game plan, to literally look at you guys and go beyond just, this is what they like to do, this is how we should defend this, and this is how we should defend that. It should be, this is what we want to take away from these guys, this is how we're going to attack them. This is the stuff they give up. These are the shots we're going to take. These are the you know, once we make these shots, this will open that up. So looking at the Bucks, you know, first off, their pick and roll defensive coverage, they leave a lot of space in the mid-range, you know, and that's perfect for a guy like Kawhi, who can really work in the mid-range and come off and hit those shots, you know, and open that stuff up, you know. So I think they're going to leave with their bigs hanging so far back in the paint, it's going to open that door, you know, for that stuff. It's going to open the door for Marc Gasol at the elbow, you know, pick and pop situations and things like that. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities to score in the mid range. Once you start hurting them there and they got to adjust, then things will open up and you'll have the paint and you'll have, you know, more space on the 3-point line, because they're going to have to adjust and go away from their main defense, you know. Offensively, you know, listen, they shoot a ton of threes. They don't make a lot. They're average in 3-point percentage. You know, they're league average. I think, you know, last I checked, they're around 35% or so. I'm gonna click a few buttons while I talk. Yeah, so I'm sure
35%. 35.3. They're about 12th.
Okay, so it's gone up a little bit. Last time I looked, they were like 15th. But they shoot there. But they're top in the league in shooting, or, mm-hmm. or second. You know, it's one of those things where, like, I'm not going to give up open threes to them. What I'm going to do is, listen, Giannis is going to get his. It doesn't matter if you double team him, triple team him, he's going to get his. When he really hurts you is when he's getting his and the other guys are getting theirs. So great. I'm going to try to play Giannis one-on-one. I might, you know, find opportunities to double and depending who's on the court and whatnot, but I'm staying with the shooters. Chris Middleton's not going to get an open three. Mirotić is not going to get an open three. Brooke Lopez is not going to get an open three. Like if when they kick it out to him, there's going to be a guy right in their shorts, you know, it's going to be ready to go to give him a hard contest. And if they make shots, they make shots. You know, I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge Giannis to beat me by himself for an entire series. And it's not to say that he can't. It's damn tiring to do that. It is hard to do. You know, it is he might have phenomenal numbers, but he might slowly wear down in that sense. And that's a lot of pressure on him for a team that's never gotten out of the first round, you know, with, you know, and a lot of those guys don't have a ton of playoff experience to begin with. You know, I think they're very schemable in that sense. That's the first place I would start with that, you know, and then I would change where I'd pick Giannis up. Sometimes I'd pick him up full court. Sometimes I'd meet him at half. Sometimes I'd meet him below the 3-point line. Sometimes I'd meet him at the 3-point line. I would just experiment with so many different ways to just kind of keep him off balance. You know, it's Canada, so I don't know how much you guys are up to American football, but you never blitz the quarterback from the same position over and over again. It's just easy for them to pick apart. But if you have them guessing and have them confused as to where this stuff's coming from, then you have a shot. And I think that's what I would do with them. You know, I think when I look at the Celtics, and I'm sorry, this is a long-winded answer, I think the Celtics, if they can get their guys going, I mean, Tatum's been in a slump. You know, Kyrie's one of the best closers in the game, though. But if they can get guys going, they can play different ways. You know, they can run some stuff through Al Horford for a few possessions and give Kyrie a break and whatnot. And I know everybody's going to say to me, well, they can run stuff through Chris Middleton. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I'm fine with that. That's fine. Yes, that's what I want. Run your offense through Chris Middleton. That's fine. And if he beats us, great. I'll shake his hand and start working on my offseason. But I'm not a big Bucks believer in that sense, because they only play one way, and it's everything through Giannis. And if you find a way to minimize that impact, you're going to have a great chance to win the series.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing. The Raptors actually, they played the Bucks like 2 years ago in the 2017 playoffs. And the Bucks played really well. You know, they took a 2-1 lead at one point. And the Raptors roster was different. And the Bucks roster was different. And also they had different coach and stuff like that. A lot has changed in the last 2 years. But like Giannis in that series averaged 25 points a game. Shot 53% from the field. Even shot 40% from three. You know, and filled the box score obviously with everything else. But, you know, the Raptors got through that was in six. And a lot of that was kind of the same strategy as you mentioned. You know, you kind of take away the shooters. They've gotten better shooters. And some of their shooters have gotten better. But, yeah, I agree with you. How do you look at a guy like, you know, Malcolm Brogdon? He may or may not be back in time for the East Finals if they get that far. How does that change their dynamic? Because to me, from the outside, it feels like, you know, a guy goes down in Bud's system, but Bud has these guys operating and executing so well that even a guy like Sterling Brown could just randomly come in and give you pretty good production, good minutes. You know, Pat Connaughton, every time I look up, he's having good minutes. So, you know.
I mean, I'm not. Sterling Brown and Pat Connaughton are nice. I'm not worried about them in the playoffs.
Fair enough.
If they're beating me in the playoffs, I have bigger problems. You know, to be honest. And it's not a slight on those guys. I mean, how much playoff experience do those guys have? You know, listen, Brogdon was a big blow to them. You know, he besides the fact that he was a 50-40-90 guy, you know, he has a great ability, just kind of straight line drives and really put pressure on the defense. So, you know, he definitely would have been a problem. I would probably still stay with my same game plan, but he would definitely be that problem. He's a tough dude. He's a tough player, you know, and that's he's definitely a challenge. What I think people underestimate with a guy that's going to be out 6 weeks, in particular with a leg injury, it really hurts your conditioning more than anything else. It's not a thing where you can keep running and keep your wind up and things like that and keep that conditioning. It's not an upper body injury. It's not like a bicep injury. We're like, okay, well, I can run. I can do all those things. You know, it's one of those things where he's got to rest, you know, and not be on the court. So it takes a while to come back from that. So even when he comes back on the court, it takes a while to get back into game shape. And now we're not asking him to get into game shape. We're asking him to get into playoff game shape.
Right.
Which is even more intense, which is even harder. It's one of those things like everything, the intensity level ratchets up another 10, you know, 10%, 15%, like each game, not each series, each game, as you know, depending on the situation. If you lose game one, man, that game, you guys know it. That game two is so stressful. God.
It's the worst feeling.
It's that thing, you know, and I think those are the things that people tend to overlook. And I think that's something that injury really kind of hurts them, not just because of the timeline of when he comes back, but how long it'll take for Brogdon to be back. And I even kind of counter, I know there's been a tweets going around on Twitter about, you know, well, you know, they've only played Giannis 32 minutes a game or whatnot, you know, wait until they kick it up to 40. I go like, you know, at a certain point, it's a rate of diminishing returns. You know, I know we always go, oh, the per 36. I go like, you know, I hate the per 36.
Yeah, nobody's playing 36 minutes anymore.
Well, it's not even that. Even if you are, you know, how you played in that 8 minutes stretch from the 24 to the 36 minute.
Right.
You're not as fresh, you know, depending on when that is and things like that. So Giannis going from 30 minutes to, let's assume, 40, it's a stressful 40 minutes. And like I just said, it's even more intense because of the playoffs. So it's not even a more 10 more minutes or however more minutes he's – let me pull up his number since I'm on his page. It's just laziness on my end. You know, but like it's more intense. It's a stressful situation. It's not an easy it's not even just a regular eight regular season minutes. It's eight playoff minutes. It's basically like 15 regular season minutes. Like it's a whole other thing. I can't figure out how to work the internet. but it's all this thing. So I even think with Giannis pushing him to play 40 minutes after his body's been conditioned to play just 32, 33 minutes, I won't be surprised if we start to see him tire, you know, especially if a series goes long and it's see him get tired in games 5, 6, and 7 because he's playing 40 something minutes when he's not used to having done that all year. I think all of that kind of matters and comes into play with the Bucks. So, I'm sure I'm going to have angry Bucks fans now. This is all your fault.
No, this is perfect. Listen, as a Raptors fan, what you have just said really comforts me, just mentally in thinking about the Bucks. And I will say, like, if you just look at the playoffs as like a war of attrition, right? Because it is, like you mentioned, high intensity, and it's a lot of games, and you know, you're seeing the same opponent over and over again. The Raptors have more bodies they can throw on Giannis than the Bucks have in terms of bodies they can throw on Kawhi. And I feel like, you know, you obviously the Raptors have primarily chosen Pascal Siakam to match Giannis just physically, actually. That matchup actually works nicely. Not that anyone, you know, physically is equal to Giannis. I mean, he's probably the most athletic player in the game right now, but you know, Siakam is long, you know, quick, things like that. And then you got Kawhi you can throw on him. Occasionally you could put OG Anunoby on him as well. Whereas the other side, the Bucks, you know, they have Chris Middleton, who's done a decent job on Kawhi Leonard this season. Although I felt like some of that was just a little bit just Kawhi being off rhythm, to be honest, in a couple of those games. But you know, they have Chris Middleton, and past that, they don't really have a guy. I mean, if they want, they could put Giannis on Kawhi, but then that still leaves, you know, Pascal, who can go one-on-one against a smaller guy. Gasol can obviously get his offense a little bit as well. And in terms of that pick-and-roll offense, you know, Gasol being able to shoot the above-the-break three, that helps a lot because the Bucks are leaving that open every single time. So, you know what? I'm feeling better about the Bucks series. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Raptor fans, when you see me getting attacked on Twitter, I'm not going to respond. I expect you guys to respond.
Okay, that is one thing Raptors fans do really well on Twitter is defend people.
No. Listen. You go. I've had my run-ins with you guys.
Yeah. What did you say?
I don't know. I'm sure I just said I didn't believe in you guys last year. Well, you know what it was last year when everybody was talking about, oh, the Raptors are different. I was just like, man, at the end of games, you guys are going to be the same team. That was my opinion. It was just I didn't feel like you guys changed as much as you thought you changed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's true.
High note, and now I feel like I just poured salt.
No.
It's an old wound.
That's completely true. That's exactly what happened to the Raptors last year. Okay. So the Bucks, we talked about the Bucks, the Celtics, you know, I see what you're saying with the talent and versatility. And of course, Al Horford has always been a guy that's torched the Raptors. Kyrie's had a couple great games against the Raptors this year as well. I just feel like, you know, especially now that you have Gasol up there, right? Like one guy I felt like was, you know, as sort of playoff series and you get deeper and deeper into the playoffs, you get more and more versatile teams. I felt like JV was a guy where, because he's limited defensively and in terms of just, you know, physically and also the way he reads the game, it's quite honestly, both of them are pretty slow. It was difficult to play him against a team like, you know, the Celtics. Even Aaron Baines was outplaying him in those specific matchups. And then you swap in that with a guy like Gasol, and then you've also had Serge, who actually matches up pretty well with Horford. He's had a lot of success against Horford so far, and just physically he kind of, you know, negates a lot of what Horford does really well. I don't know. I feel pretty confident about the Celtics series too. This is crazy. Now I'm saying the Raptors are going to the finals and feeling good about it. You know, I'm going to be disappointed again. Every year I'm as a Raptors fan, I'll be disappointed.
It's certainly possible. It's certainly in the realm of possibility.
I even put Warriors on here as in the topic list.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you guys can beat the Warriors. Nope. I think once the Warriors go small, I think that becomes a problem for you. I think, you know.
Well, you don't like Pascal at five? The Raptors' secret weapon this year.
Yeah, no, so like I said, once the Warriors go small, I just don't, you know, and listen, I know everybody's going to come back and say, like, well, we swept them. The regular season Warriors are a very different team than finals Warriors, right? If they get to the finals, they're very different. They're much more into it. They're at the end of this thing, and we all think, you know, I don't know what your belief is. My belief is this is kind of the final run of this iteration of the Warriors, and they ain't going out losing. So I think we'll get the best of them. I think, you know, it's a tough cover, you know, Steph, Clay, all those guys, you know, you're certainly equipped to run with this team. You have enough wings, you have enough depth to chase these guys around. But, you know, the thing about the Warriors is they just freaking find ways to win, and it annoys you.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Steph is so good at relocating right after he passes. And I mean, you can see it in the defender's eyes. Okay, I stopped Steph's drive. Great. He just passed. Oh, shit. He's open now.
Yep.
You know, it's just basically what happens. You could see it, you know. Steph passes and he knows he's just going to relocate right to another spot. And you know what? Your defender has just, as soon as he passed, it's natural instinct to just kind of let up for like a split second. Steph takes advantage of it, hits a three. You know, it's those kinds of things. And at the end of the day, I mean, it'd be fun as hell to watch Kawhi and KD go at each other.
Oh, man. They had one of the greatest one-on-one battles of the season. That was like overtime. Kawhi had 38 and KD had 51.
Right. And I think it's just – it's going to be – a fun series. It'd be a fun series to watch. You have Kyle Lowry and Van Vliet to kind of chase around Steph, you know, all of these guys. I don't think it'd be a sweep, but I'd be very, very, very impressed if the Raptors beat the Warriors in the finals.
Listen, if the Raptors even get one win in the finals against these Warriors, who, by the way, you know, have basically five all-star caliber players, I think the Raptors will hang a banner for that. In the Scotiabank Arena, they actually have a Bon Jovi banner, believe it or not. So,
well, listen, the Staples Center has a Taylor Swift banner, so it's not like I'm going to judge.
Oh, that's right. So with the Clippers, so it's actually true that they would, during Clippers games, they would cover up the Lakers banners.
That was a Doc thing. So it started right when Doc came, and his reasoning was, he's like, how can it feel like a Clipper home game when you have those banners kind of overshadowing you? And I understand the point. I mean, it makes sense. You know, even though it's the Clipper home game, there's still Lakers, you know, paraphernalia all over the place, you know? And so I understand it. It's just, you know, everybody wants to make fun of the Clippers. You know, we were the redheaded stepchild literally when we had Blake, you know, of the LA basketball market, right? You know, if you're either a Laker fan or you just rooted against the Lakers by being a Clipper fan. So it was one of those things. And so I understand why Doc does it. It makes sense. It was kind of weird to see like all our players, you know, it's kind of like Clipper propaganda,
right,
you know,
right.
All these dudes. And then, you know, inevitably one of those guys would get traded and you'd be like, this is awkward now.
Right.
But, you know, that's what Doc instituted, and it's smart. And I understand it, you know, 'cause you are trying to create a home court one way or another. And that's just, it's just tough to have that overshadowing you.
Hmm. I mean, as you know, Raptors fans right now are not at odds with Clippers fans because, you know, those don't exist. But, you know, it's just all this, the Clipper pursuit of Kawhi Leonard has people kind of negative towards the Clippers these days. But, you know, all things considered, the Clippers have done a pretty good job rebuilding that team.
They've done a great job rebuilding on the fly. I do think, you know, Raptors fans, you guys need to get to the finals, man.
Yeah.
That's the key there. I think, you know, it's going to be 50-50. It's going to be close. I'm not going to leave you with good feelings there, but if you don't get to the finals, I think you might have a problem.
All right. Well, there you go. That's why, well, at least, you know, you made us feel better about the Bucks series and the Sixers series
I gave you the chances to get to the finals. I gave you everything you need to do. You need to send this to Nick Nurse when you play the Bucks.
I'll slip it along at practice.
You know, just be like, hey, you need to listen to this guy for a little bit. But that's if you guys get to the finals. And I think, listen, you guys got a good chance. You know, the more I think about it, again, tomorrow I'll change my mind and the wind will blow a different way. But, you know, you definitely got a shot. I feel way more comfortable and confident in this team than I have in any other Raptors team.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then lastly, to end the show. You know, you spent two seasons with the Spurs between 2009 and 2011. You saw Danny Green's first season with the Spurs. I kind of consider that his rookie season. Like, I don't really want to count the river dancing version of Danny Green with, like, the 2008-2009 Cavs. I mean, honestly, he was, like, I was thinking about this the other day. He was basically the Cameron Payne. Remember how Cameron Payne used to always dance for Russell Westbrook? He was basically LeBron's Cameron Payne. Except he turned that into like a 10-year career. He's going to get another great contract after this season. He's been phenomenal. I mean, just share with us any stories you have Danny Green, because he's probably, in terms of public rating here in Toronto, like the most popular Raptor at this point.
Well, I mean, after last night's game where he, you know, shot the piss out of it, he better be. I mean, he's shooting like 40% on the season, right, with you guys? Shoot, 45%. Gosh.
Yeah.
That's a great
comeback season, yeah.
I mean, this has been a phenomenal year for him. You know, it's amazing to to watch a guy, and this is a true testament about, you know, working your butt off. You know, Danny came from Cleveland to San Antonio, played even less games in San Antonio. You know, only played in 8 games that year, but he was in the gym every day working. He's improved immensely. You know, kind of like coming out of UNC, you know, he was just an athletic guy. He wasn't a shooter, you know, and really worked on his game and really kind of patterned his game around being a 3-and-D guy. And you know, you got to tip your hat to him. He's been phenomenal. You know, my biggest memories of Danny is just that he was always in the gym working, you know, always, you know, 3-on-3, you know, games or whatever, and competing. And he had a fire and wanted to get better and wanted to improve. And you just see all this stuff. So it's amazing to see the growth in this, you know, this kid kind of really developing. And you know, it's funny to call him a kid. He's a grown-ass man now. But, you know, kind of just seeing him mature to the point that, you know, he was huge, like you said at the beginning of this, you know, in the Spurs winning the championship in 2014. You know, he was a big part in them getting to the finals in 2013, you know, and he's been a guy, you know, and he struggled a little bit since then. And it's great to see the resurgence now in Toronto and how well he's kind of built. I mean, he's earned it in every sense of the word. He was never satisfied with where he was, you know, and worked his tail off. And it's a true testament to his character more than anything else. And just overall, just a great guy. You know, he's got that big smile that just you can't help smile when he smiles at you.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, and it's sometimes it's annoying because you want to be grumpy and he just gives you that smile and you're like, oh, well, fuck you, Danny. You know, and then you end up smiling. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. Yep. Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, it's fine. I told you from the pod, we could do this. It's fine.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, you know, but it's just one of those things that's like, you know, he just kind of exudes good personality, good locker room guy, great teammate. He's everything you would want in your teammate. And he's everything you want in your locker room. So I think it's awesome seeing him kind of blow up again this year and shooting the piss out of it after he shot the way he shot it last year. Not that he shot it bad either. He was a 36% shooter last year with the Spurs, but it's impressive to really kind of see him take that leap again and really big. And that was a big thing too. When the trade went down, I remember just turning to somebody going like, that's not a throw-in.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's what it looks like.
I was surprised the Spurs just kind of tossed him into kind of balanced salary. In fact, they actually gave the Raptors an extra $5 million in the deal just to sort of offset the money.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing. So I just think for him, I think it's awesome to watch him do all this stuff, and it's earned and it's deserved. Every little bit of success he gets and whatever big payday he gets at the end of this year, it's all deserved.
Yeah, see, there you go, Raptors. Please, when we make the finals and Kawhi resigns, obviously, and you know, and the salary cap is, you know, way in the river mirror. Please make sure to also save some money in the budget for Danny Green as well, because he's worth it, man. He's completely worth it.
Well, I mean, where would this team be without him? I mean, exactly. It's not, you know, he's a guy you have to account for defensively. You know, he's a high level shooter. He's one of those guys. He's a reason why you can't pack the paint. You know, and you know, you aren't having the season you're having if Danny Green isn't a part of it. It's important. Stars take you a long way, but role players really help you as well. We've seen it in every finals, you know, in every playoff run. We've seen role players step up, you know, for years and decades in the NBA, and this is a true example of it.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Mo, thank you so much for appearing on the podcast. Where can people find you and your work?
You can, you know, the best place to do is just follow me on Twitter at mo.keel_NBA. I tweet out all that stuff. Sometimes I tweet out nonsense, but you can ignore that and enjoy my basketball stuff. I'm doing some, as Will said, contributing with the Washington Post. So there'll be some writing coming up there. I have a podcast, which you can find on iTunes, called The Jump Ball. And just, you know, follow me on Twitter and you'll always see my stuff. Thank you, Will, for having me and letting me talk for way longer than I should have.
No, this is great. And by the way, I visited the jumpball.net yesterday, sort of doing some research for the show and stuff.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code program.
And I watched, I found myself watching many of the Jump Ball University videos.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie, it's the production of those videos could maybe use a bit of work.
Yes.
But I found it to be super educational, you know, in terms of, you know, as fans, like if you want to know more about the game, like nobody really takes you through like what is the strong side, what's like a pin down, right? What are the different strategies to play pick and roll? And so there's like 2-3 minute videos here on the Jump Ball and the Jump Ball University, and they're really useful, especially if you can get around like the, you know, the MS Paint graphics that are at the start of that video.
Listen, man, just because I live in Hollywood don't mean I have a special effects guy in the background. So, I do my best with what I can on Final Cut Pro.
Yeah, no, seriously, those are, I'm joking, but really, seriously, those are very educational videos, and the Jump Ball podcast as well. So, Mel, thank you so much. And finally, for listeners to the podcast, if you haven't already, please, I know you're probably tired of hearing me say this, but please rate and review the podcast on iTunes and, you know, wherever else you're listening to the podcast, but especially on iTunes. That's the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada, and I'll be back next week with more of the Raptors recap.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.